Talk Central is brought to you by CloudGate, a micro mega company. All the power of a PC, the flexibility of Android, all at a fraction of the cost. For homework or play, available at takealot.com or cloudgate.co.za for only $1,999.
I'm Rechard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan McLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 110 for the weekend starting Friday, 5 September 2014.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism. Look for us on Twitter at Tech Central.
On Google Plus at Plus Tech Central.
And on Facebook at Tech Central ZA.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about President Zuma's proclamation ordering an investigation at the Department of Communications.
We also chat about ICASA's termination rates decision and Telkom's apparent move to embrace open access.
As always, we pick the week's biggest winner and biggest loser, and Duncan and I will pick our product or app of the week.
That's right, but first we must pay the bills. We'll be back in just a moment.
Okay, I'm in. Just watch out for security.
Don't worry about him, but let's drop this joint.
Avoid the hassles and costs of on-site guarding and keep an eye on your business premises with Guardian Eye remote monitoring from Vox Telecom. We'll monitor your premises 24/7, utilizing your existing data link to keep costs down. You can remotely view and control access points from your smartphone or tablet. Guardian Eye from Vox Telecom, the visionary remote monitoring system for businesses. SMS your name to 31965 and we'll call you right back. Standard rates apply.
Well, welcome to the show, Rechard. How's it?
How's it, Duncan? It's so beautiful to be outside today.
It's beautiful. It's stunning. It's a spring day, and I'm taking the opportunity to lap up some sunshine. So you're going to hear some birds in the background, some noise in the nearby park, I'm sure, as well. So excuse that. But let's get straight into the Newsweek, and a big news day it's been today, actually, with President Jacob Zuma signing a proclamation. Effectively ordering the special investigation, or asking this, I'm not sure what the correct terminology is, asking the special investigation unit to probe various allegations of corruption and maladministration that were allegedly committed at the Department of Communications under the watch of Minister Dina Pule. Significant development, I think, One has to question why now, of course. It's been quite some time since these allegations were published. Originally, of course, many of these stories were broken by the Sunday Times. One of the main focus areas of this investigation by the SIU is going to be into the controversial ICT in Durban.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming, we were all hoping, but it's good to see that something's being done about this now. I guess it's now the real question, how is this going to play out and what the effect going to be? Zuma himself obviously doesn't have a clean set of hands, and this could potentially be a deflection tactic. I don't know. I'm speculating, but what do you think?
It could be indeed. I mean, there's so much news around Zuma at the moment, and the spy tapes and all the rest of it. So it could. The timing of it indeed is interesting, and one has to obviously question that. But I think it must be welcomed anyway that there's going to be this investigation into some aspects or some issues that haven't been reported on before, such as an event that happened in Limpopo last year and another one that happened up in Richards Bay on the KZN North Coast. So. Let's see what comes out of this process, but I think at face value it needs to be welcomed, and hopefully some of the mess that's been that this department has been in is going to get sorted out through this process, and some of the people who've been alleged to have committed maladministration and worse at this department are brought to book.
And let's hope this is setting a standard for how these kind of allegations are being handled in the future. Yeah, it needs to be taken seriously.
Indeed. And of course, the Hawks are also investigating this case. So there's a number of parallel investigations going on. We've got the Public Protector's Report that was issued earlier this year. Mm-hmm. Dina Pule, of course, is no longer Minister of Communications. And in fact, she's no longer even an ordinary MP after she announced a few months ago that she was going to step down, no doubt under pressure from her cabinet colleagues or her colleagues within the ANC. Anyway, fascinating development, and I think it's probably going to result in quite a nervous time ahead for a number of officials at the Department of Communications.
Yeah, definitely, especially if they're going to have to pay back any of the money. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, indeed, and certainly that's one area where the SIU has considerable power. and it works hand in hand with the Hawks and the assets forfeiture unit to recover money that's been misappropriate or misspent or spent in corrupt ways. So there's a very real possibility that individuals are going to be asked to repay money spent here, and I think we're going to see a lot more. Worms coming out of the woodwork. We're going to see a lot more on the story in the months ahead. I don't think it's gone quiet yet. And I must say, I'm looking forward to reading the Sunday Times this weekend, which has really led on the story. And I'm sure they're going to have some fresh angles this weekend on this particular piece.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, the other bombshell news, which was announced late yesterday afternoon, and actually on very short notice. I just got back here into the office in Randburg, Rachel, you'll know, and an email popped into my inbox saying, press conference at Icaster in Sandton in 30 minutes. So I rushed off to Sandton's offices on Catherine Street in Sandton, they promptly announced new termination rates on a draft basis, I must say.
So
they're not final yet, but these are the intended final rates. And I think all round bad news for Cell C. While Cell C will continue to enjoy asymmetry for the fully 3-year period, because it falls underneath the new threshold that Icaster has defined of 20% of terminated minutes. And will therefore get the asymmetry or the beneficial interconnection rate for the full 3-year period. That interconnection rate, that asymmetry rate rather, has been reduced substantially. I think it was sitting at around 110 or 120% right now, and it's going to get cut to 50% as of the 1st of October. So this puts Cell C in a very difficult position.
But what does this mean for new players coming to the market? Will they get the benefit of these?
They will get all players with less than 20% of the total market's minutes will automatically benefit. So I think you'll find that ISPs that terminate calls on Telkom's network will get a beneficial asymmetry, for example. You'll find that probably even Neotel will get a beneficial rate for calls terminated on Telkom's network as a fixed line provider. And Cell C will benefit as well. But the rate of asymmetry that Cell C has been enjoying, they really are the big loser in this race decision by Icaster. I've seen a couple of analysts suggesting already that Icaster could take this matter on review, that it would make sense for Cell C to take this matter on review because it is the big loser here, and try and perhaps delay the implementation thereof because of the big impact it's going to have on its financial performance. But if Icaster has done its job properly, which one has to assume they've done this time, given that they've been given access to the operators, they've had a full set of data for this. So one has to assume, well, that's always dangerous with Icaster, but one has to assume that they've done a proper analysis using the so-called Lyric Plus model of the costs of actually terminating a call and made the correct judgment in determining these draft rates. So it's bad news for Cell C, and I wonder what this means for the future of the company, which is already in a very tight position. Is it going to be able to raise the additional equity and debt that it has in the past? Are the shareholders going to be as keen as they have been up to now to continue to fund this organization, or do the shareholders now say, well, let's go to the market and let's see if we can find a buyer? Do they start shopping it around?
Yeah, I certainly think we'll see movements from Cell C as a result of this.
There's no doubt they have to do something, because it puts them in a much more difficult position to compete from a price perspective.
Mm-hmm.
While they still benefit from asymmetry, they can't be as aggressive in that retail pricing space as they have been. While Vodacom and MTN are probably still going to be annoyed at the fact that they have any asymmetry, it really does put them, it puts Cell C in a bit of a difficult spot. We'd have to have a more detailed conversation with their chief financial officer and their CEO to get some insight into actually what it means from a financial perspective, and no doubt we'll do that at some point in the coming months. But interesting times and an interesting decision by Icaster rather.
Yeah, certainly, and I think it was inevitable, and it is inevitable that somebody might walk away from this as not being the happiest company around, because it had to be fixed somehow, and I think that leap that was taken in the long run will certainly pay off for everybody.
In a way, though, it is grossly unfair towards Celsi, because the high termination rate, or the high asymmetry rather, that they have enjoyed over the last 6 months was as a result of ICASA effectively not doing its job properly.
True.
Sure, they didn't get all the data they needed from the operators and had to do some thumbsuck work to get to the rates that they came up with at the beginning of the year. But, making these big changes, these big swings in regulation is not good for the industry at all, especially in an industry where the third player is struggling to survive. The second biggest player is in a difficult position, retrenching jobs, not only because of the regulatory situation, but also because it was too slow to react to market changes. Mm. And arguably the biggest operator is entrenching its dominance. So it's a really difficult, unfortunate situation, I think, that ICASA has regulated in the way that it has. And I think that maybe the message that needs to come out of this all is that we need much greater certainty going forward for the industry, because you can't have these massive swings. In Celsi's case, for example, these massive swings in asymmetry make it very difficult to do forward planning, to make management decisions, and for shareholders to make commitments in terms of providing additional funding to the business.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I guess we'll have to see how it plays out. I mean, this is going to be a long term repercussions
for sure. And once again, must emphasise, these are drafts, so we could see further changes before the end of this month when it has to file the final regulations.
Yeah.
But no doubt, Celsi's lawyers and regulatory guys are working hard to formulate a response to ICASA to these draft rates. Good. The last story I wanted to chat about this week, and it came out of I went down to Port Elizabeth this week. It actually turned out to be one of the more beneficial, I think, SATNAC events I've been to in recent years. SATNAC, of course, is Telkom's annual conference. I forget what it stands for. It has a long name, like Southern African Telecommunications. I'm going to get it wrong if I try and guess it. But it's actually quite a cool annual event that they do, where they recognize the work of students in the telecommunications field. And it's always a good opportunity to catch up with the Minister of Communications. He's always there. Siya Bongwe Ncwele, and I had a good half hour interview with him, and also had the opportunity to sit down with Sipho Maseko, the CEO of Telkom, and it was actually my interview with Maseko that was the most interesting of the trip, because he revealed exclusively to us, I must emphasize, that Telkom is looking at embracing the open access model for fiber to the home. Which is a significant departure for a company that in the past was very much in the monopoly, vertically integrated model of telecommunications, where we will control everything and do everything. While they've been opening progressively over the years, you know, through service providers and opening the market and trying to split their wholesale and retail divisions, embracing the open access model will signify a significant departure in approach for Telkom, and I think a good one.
Yeah,
it's certainly going to be beneficial for the greater society, for the greater country, if Telkom does go this route. By open access, I think we should probably come back to that. By open access, we mean a proper split of the wholesale and services levels, where Telkom provides access on an open basis, over which any service provider and any type of service provider can provide services in a totally open and transparent and non-discriminatory way. It's very similar to the way Vumatel, for example, in Parc is just deploying infrastructure. They're putting the fiber down and letting anyone supply services on top of that. So Telkom is looking at a similar model. They say they're looking at a similar model for their fiber deployment, which is really exciting, I think.
Yeah, especially if it means we don't have to pay our telephone line rental, because this could mean that you can get a straight ADSL package from any ISP you choose. Obviously, Telkom will still make money because they'll be charging those ISPs fees for the usage, but essentially it means we can get pure ADSL services without having anything bolted on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a practical effect of this, and they're looking, I understand, to do this in the first half of 2015, where if you, for example, go to AfriHost or to MWeb, you'd get your entire service from them. There'd be no interface at all with Telkom. Telkom would still be there, of course, providing the infrastructure, but you wouldn't know about them at all, and you would interface entirely with your service provider. But yeah, it's fascinating, and I think perhaps the most interesting thing is that Sipho Maseko said that if the open access approach to fiber works, then Telkom is considering doing the same for copper, this legacy ADSL and VDSL network. So interesting times, and a very interesting approach from Telkom. One has to wonder whether any of this was forced on them by the competition authorities, or whether this was advanced voluntarily by the new management team. I don't know which it is. I'd like to know.
It's a good question.
You know, the Competition Commission has some real experts in this field, and has done over the years done a lot of investigation into the fixed line market. You know, they reached that agreement last year where they said that there'd be this structural separation of wholesale and retail. So there was obviously there was a discussion between the competition authorities and Telkom, where they very quickly reached consensus on these issues. But I'd love to know whether it was Sipho Maseko and his team that went to the Competition Commission and said, well, we've had this almost, I don't know, call it a Damascene conversion. we now believe in the necessity of open access and doing things differently, or whether it was a case of the strong leadership at the Competition Commission going to Telkom and saying, well, if you want us off our backs in future, then you need to do this, and this, and this is why we think you should do it, blah, blah, blah. And Sipho Maseko and his team then said, you're right, let's do that. I'd love to know which it was.
Yeah, we should find out. We should see.
We will find out over time. I'll ask Sipho next time I see him. Interesting development, and we'll be watching this one very closely. We, of course, had Andile Nkaba, the chairman of Dimension Data Middle East and Africa, saying at a press conference yesterday that I attended that there should be open. He's a strong proponent of open access, and Internet Solutions and Dimension Data are going to be lobbying various parties, including the FTTH Council and other, he called them bilateral forums, where in advancing his viewpoint that not only fixed but also wireless access in South Africa should all be delivered in future on an open access basis. And he's strongly of the view that the new spectrum that needs to be opened up, the 2.6 gigahertz and 800 megahertz bands, should be allocated strictly on the basis that it'll be made available on an open access basis to operators. So, interesting times. We'll see. Sorry, Rachid.
No, I was just going to say, I was trying to emphasize what you were saying earlier. This is the best thing for the country going forward. I mean, you can break it down to rand and cents, but if you look at what South Africa needs from its infrastructure and from its broadband potential, something like this is absolutely imperative.
I like it. I mean, I like the model. I like, you know, having chatted to Neil Schoeman at Vumatel about the way they're approaching this, you know, the open access way they're approaching this, and we've seen other new fiber providers doing the same thing. Seacom is effectively an open access project. Dark Fiber Africa has approached things on an open access basis. It sounds very good, but then you go and talk to Vodacom and MTN. Vodacom in particular, I remember we had a conversation, what was it, 3 or 4 months ago now, with Shamil Yusuf. If you look up, there's a video on the website, a video interview we did with him, where he spoke very strongly against open access, arguing that it's not good for competition, and it's not good, wouldn't be good for Vodacom. So there are two sides to this, and maybe at some point we need to get it's almost becoming like a religious war, isn't it? So maybe we should get the proponents on one side and the proponents of the other side around a table at some point, and we can have a good 2-hour debate and put it on video and put it on the site. I think it'll be fascinating.
Yeah, definitely, I agree. We should do that.
Excellent. Great. Well, that covers the news for this week. Well, actually, it doesn't, because there was tons of other news, but those are the highlights we wanted to chat about quickly in the podcast this week. Winner and loser this week, we actually don't have a winner. We were thinking of toying with the idea of perhaps making it ICASA, but I don't think we can, because they've just created too much damn uncertainty and instability in this industry with these different rates decisions. So I don't think we should make them necessarily our loser of the week. I certainly don't think they should be our winner this week. However, choosing a loser this week is much easier. In fact, we've got two. Rechat, do you want to pick up the
one? I think without a doubt it's Standard Bank. I mean, if you look at the mess up they had in their systems earlier this week, it's the kind of thing you can't really afford to have in this day and age with, you know, digital banking, online services, and people's money, especially around the beginning of the month when debit orders go through. you know, I'd like to think that all of these institutions have backup to the backup systems and redundancy on every level, but clearly that's not the case. Clearly many of and Standard Bank isn't alone in this. I mean, we've seen from FNB numerous glitches in their systems over the last few months. So Standard Bank and potentially more banks to follow. Yeah, loser for this week.
Right, our second pick this week has to be Dina Pule. I didn't think we'd be writing much about her anymore, actually. Yeah. But she's back in the news thanks to Zuma's decision, President Zuma's decision to ask the SIU to investigate a long record of alleged maladministration and corruption that occurred at the Department of Communications while she was minister. So she's an obvious candidate this week for our loser of the week. Krechot, what have you got for your pick this week?
So for my pick, it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody listening to this podcast. It's Instagram's Hyperlapse. It's the app of the moment. And essentially what it is Instagram has launched a separate app. It doesn't run on Instagram itself. But what this app allows you to do is record video and then time-lapse it according to... You've got a little sliding scale so you can speed it up or slow it down. But the most fascinating thing about the Hyperlapse is the technology that they've employed and the algorithms... to be able to create this effect, because what inherently it does is also stabilize the image. And if you haven't seen a Hyperlapse video, just go onto Google.
Very cool. Yeah.
Google search. And interestingly enough, they're not the first people, or they're not unique in the technology. Microsoft has actually pioneered much of it with their research and development department.
Okay.
If you go to research.microsoft.com, there's some fascinating videos and also some explanations around how their technology works. But coming back to Instagram's Hyperlapse, essentially what they've done is they've cleverly figured out how you can use the phone's gyroscope to understand the movement in the camera, and then you offset that against the images or the footage that you've taken, and that allows them to stabilize the image, because as the camera moves, your gyro moves along with it. Mm. And their algorithms kind of balance it out and figures out where the camera was so that they can center and stabilize the image. It's incredibly fascinating, but it's great technology. It turns any boring subject into something really interesting. Unfortunately, it's only available on iOS for now.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that I want to make it the loser of the week.
But if you do like the technology, I mean, there's a lot of different applications on Android's platform, on the Google Play Store, that does similar effects. I have to say that Instagram's Hyperlapse is one of the nicer applications to use. But yeah, if you search on the Google Play Store, you'll find something similar for Android. For iOS users, go check it out, Instagram Hyperlapse.
Very cool. I look forward to it coming to Android. I'm sure it'll be there in the not-too-distant future.
Oh, yes.
Cool. My pick this week, and Richard, I want to get your take on it as well, because I think you've looked at it, is this product that this website or service, I'm not sure what you call it, that Amazon has just bought for almost $1 billion, called Twitch. If you don't know it, it's quite fascinating. If you have a decent broadband connection, go check it out. It basically allows video gamers from around the world to broadcast their games, and they don't just broadcast games. I've seen channels where you've just got a bunch of guys sitting around on their couch having a conversation, and they're broadcasting it to the world. I'm fascinated. I don't know why, but I'm fascinated by the model. I almost have a feeling that it should be bigger than just video games. It's fascinating to watch. I actually ended up watching it for about 45 minutes last night. I was watching some, I think, Call of Duty or something.
You're getting hooked.
I was watching it, and it was amazing. It was one of the world's top-end Call of Duty players. And watching this guy play was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe that someone was that good. And, you know, it made me realize how rubbish I am at games. But it's really, really incredible. And you can, it's not just a case of watching them. You can listen to them talking, dialogue. You can have a group of gamers talking to each other, playing against each other. It's really, really, really a fascinating service. And they've got a cool app as well, which runs on across a range of platforms. And I just can't help thinking, Rich, I don't know what your view is, that there must be more applications to Twitch doing other cool things with it. Some sort of global self-broadcasting system.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that could potentially be why Amazon bought them. But if you look at the trend of watching other people play games, and I've heard some interesting views on this as well, and I agree with some of them in that... If you look at what sports does, like rugby, I mean, you might not play rugby, but you enjoy watching it.
Yeah.
You get a thrill out of watching it. You have a team that you support. And with the younger generation, I mean, if we look at teenagers and maybe kids younger than that, a lot of those kids watch this, whether they have the game or not, but they are absolutely hooked by it. And I think it's the same, to me, the way that I understand it, it's certainly the same as watching a rugby game and not playing rugby or not participating in a sport. It's a thrill you get out of seeing something that's fun. And let's be honest, games, game technology, game graphics have come to a point where you can actually sit and watch and enjoy and see a lot of the detail within the game, and see the strategy. I mean, a lot of gamers also watch Twitch to get strategy from professionals that they can incorporate into their own gaming, especially when you look at the likes of World of Warcraft. That's a lot of strategy, or even Sims, for argument's sake. I see Sims has got a few popular channels. But if you look at first-person shooters, there's a lot of these action games. I mean, you can literally sit back and just enjoy the game for what it is. It's certainly not something I'll do all day, every day, but I can see part of the appeal. And I do think that's the reason why it's become so popular, is people just get a kick out of seeing other people play games.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, just apologize about the high-pitched screeching sound in the background. I'm not sure where it's coming from, but I suppose one of the dangers of recording a podcast outside.
This is the real world.
It stopped now. That's good. But you mentioned rugby, and and I was just thinking while you were talking about that could be a really interesting application for this. Imagine a future where we all have HD cameras built into our TVs or just mounted on our TVs, and imagine a game comes out, say the Stormers versus the Sharks, and you've got a couple of mates there, but your other mates couldn't make it for some reason, and they're sitting at home.
Yes.
They just fire up the service, and you can create some sort of PS session between each other, with your pictures on two couches on each other's screens, and you can watch the game, and you can talk to them while the game is going on, and see what's going on. And it actually makes the sharing of the game much more interesting. That would be in a very interesting application of the technology.
And it's certainly very possible with the technology we have today. It's just not built in natively into our TVs. Our TV certainly has high enough resolution and the capability to do picture-in-picture. Yeah, that could potentially be a very great implementation of it. Even if you stream it from a pub, for argument's sake, and you see the vibe of a pub-like environment when you're tuning into it. I mean, to me, that's part of the appeal. When I enjoy watching rugby, is going out and then having a crowd around me. I think we could be seeing the start of something new in the sports watching arena, whether it's physical sports or computer games.
So go take a look at Twitch. Let us know what you think of it, and if you had the opportunity to what way would you perhaps expand the service beyond video games to do other cool stuff. But anyway, we are out of time for this week's show. As always, if you've got feedback on the show, mail us. The email address is info@techcentral.co.za, or leave a comment on the post. And from Rachel and myself, hope you have an awesome weekend, and we'll chat to you again next week. Cheers.
Ciao, ciao.
We'll be right back.